Good evening. I'm Heather Brown, and this is Between the Covers. Tonight, we're into the second episode of Brad Smith's novel, All Hat. It's a story full of horse breeders and hangers-on, set amongst farms and racetracks in southern Ontario. Brad Smith comes from this part of the country and calls his novel Country Noir. The main character is Ray Doakes, who just finished doing time for beating up Sonny Stanton. Sonny is one obnoxious man, a millionaire's son who doesn't take no for an answer, whether from a woman or a farmer not wanting to sell his land. Ray would rather just get on with his life, and in this episode he finally visits his old girlfriend Etta. But first, we'll meet him at the bar. Here's John Cleland to pick up the story of All Hat.
Ray was drinking rye at the bar of the old Queen's Hotel. He was half in the bag when Steve Allman walked in, wearing work boots and coveralls and a Boot Hill saloon cap. Steve ordered a draft and looked down the bar.
"Ray," he said, "when'd you get out?"
Steve brought his beer over, ordered another rye for Ray. "Thanks for the drink, Steve."
"Good to see you,"
Steve said. "How you been?" Ray asked. "Can't complain. How's your old man?"
"Well, he just retired. Sold the farm. Never said a damn word to me. Came home one night and he announced he sold it off. Machinery, livestock, everything."
"Doesn't sound like Ken."
"He sold it to Sonny Stanton."
Ray had the glass to his lips. He hesitated and then took a sip.
"Truth is, I've been hoping you'd show up," Steve said. "And not just me. Sonny's up to something."
Ray put the whiskey on the bar. "Yeah, well, Sonny's always up to something."
"He set on buying up that whole concession, Ray. He's got better than half of it already."
"What's he want with it?"
"He's talking about building a huge farm co-op, but I figure he wants to develop it, build cheap houses."
"He'd have zoning problems," Ray said.
"You and I would have zoning problems. Not Sonny. He's got too much money behind him. Anyway, we've been hoping you'd show. Sonny's playing some game. Ask him a question, he'll give you six different answers. But he ain't gonna pull that with you."
Ray looked unhappily at the drink on the bar. "I got no intention of tangling with Sonny Stanton again. I'm out on parole. All I want to do is find a job and lead a normal life." Steve looked at Ray and then he shrugged.
"I guess it don't matter anyway. The money's gonna win in the end. I just hate to see all that good land get bulldozed."
"Me too," Ray said. "But you're right about the money." Steve drank the beer and then wiped off his mustache.
"You say you're looking for work?"
"Yep.
I got into the roofing business after the old man sold out. I need a man. You look like you're in shape."
Ray left the Queens with a jag on and a new job. Driving home, he was neither happy nor not. His sister Elizabeth was, in truth, no worse than he'd expected, and as far as the business with Sonny went, he'd just have to put it out of his mind. The plan to put the business with Sonny out of his mind worked fine for about 30 minutes. Driving past the Parr farm, he saw a BMW Roadster pulling out of the driveway. Sonny Stanton himself behind the wheel. Ray made a U-turn and went back as the Roadster disappeared to the north. He hesitated and then drove up to the house. Etta was in the backyard, taking wash from the clothesline. She turned at the sound of his step. He was still capable of surprising her. She was wearing jeans and a man's cotton shirt faded pale blue. Her blonde hair was short, but not too short. She wore no makeup and there were faint lines around her eyes. She looked terrific. She set the hamper down.
"You want coffee? I can smell that whiskey from here."
"Sure." He stepped toward the house, but she indicated the picnic table.
"We'll sit out here. Dad's inside, and you know he's not your biggest fan."
Ray sat on top of the picnic table, looked around. The barn had seen better days, better years. Etta brought coffee, handed him a cup, then moved to sit on a lawn chair, keeping her distance in every way.
"How are you, Ray Doakes?" Never better. Where have I heard that before? She sipped at the coffee, watched as he fumbled in his pocket for his cigarettes. This place is going to hell in a handbasket.
Well, you'd be the one to know about that destination.
We're doing all right.
How's Homer?
He's fine. Slowing down a little, I guess.
What was Sonny Stanton doing here just now?
Limping.
Her smile caught him unawares. He'd not known how much he'd wanted her to smile until she'd done so.
Sonny stopped in to see Dad, she said. He's trying to buy this place. He's trying to buy up the whole concession.
I heard. What's Homer think about that?
My father has always been impressed by money, but he won't sell this farm. If he tried, I'd stop him.
Sonny's not safe to be around, Ray said.
I know that, but don't worry. He won't mess with me. He wouldn't dare. He knows who my friends are.
You saying we're friends? He asked.
What do you think?
Polly was in the passenger seat of the Lincoln, Dean behind the wheel, driving like a lunatic as usual. They were running number 7 west of Brampton, headed for the slam dance, doing 110 and a 50 when the phone rang.
Don't answer that,
Dean ordered.
It'll be Jackson.
So? Polly asked, the ringing phone in his hand. Dean grabbed it away from him.
So? You think he wants to say hello? He's got some shit errand for us to run, like always. You want to go play fetch for Jackson?
Polly knew that it didn't really matter what he wanted, so he remained silent. They walked out of the sunlight into the dark of the slam dance, ordered a couple of beers, and then stood at the bar. A blonde woman announced as Misty was on stage, naked save for a creatively torn white T-shirt. After her big finish to She Works Hard for the Money, Misty quit the stage and went into the back room. She emerged 10 minutes later, wearing tight jeans and a white tank top, and walked to the bar.
Hi there,
Dean said. She gave him a quick look, taking in the gelled hair, the gold chain around the neck.
Hello,
she said and looked past him.
Buy you a drink?
Dean asked.
Johnny Walker Blue,
she said.
So, you're Misty.
Sure, why not?
I'm Dino. This is Polly.
What do you boys do?
We're in the thoroughbred business,
Dean said.
Misty turned back to him.
Yeah?
And what do you do in the thoroughbred business?
Well, I don't know about Dino, Polly said, but I shovel a lot of horse poop.
The three of them were sitting at a table, half pissed, when Jackson Jones came in. Dean and Polly watched as he stood just inside the door, waiting for his eyes to adjust to the darkness. Jackson didn't bother to sit down. He stood in his jeans and his boots and his faded blue shirt, and he looked at Dean without expression.
I've been trying to get you, Jackson said.
Say hi to Misty, Jackson.
Hello, Misty, Jackson said. You two better get over to the house.
Are you a genuine cowboy, Jackson? Misty asked. I never saw a black cowboy before.
I'm a horseman.
When Jackson got back to the farm, Sonny was on the porch, a cohiba in his mouth, feet up on the railing, cane hooked over the arm of the wicker chair where he sat. Sonny was looking vacantly at the paddock across the lane where Silver Dawn was grazing. Jackson parked the truck in front of the barn and sat there a moment watching Sonny. Sonny looked like shit, but then he usually did in the morning. He was wearing a short-sleeved shirt and khaki pants. He never wore shorts, self-conscious about the scars on his leg. He'd grown his dark blonde hair long of late and had taken to treating it with some sort of styling gunk. Jackson decided he wasn't much in the mood for Sonny today, but he walked over anyway, stepped onto the porch. Sonny continued to look past him.
You know, Sonny said finally, I got a good feeling about that silver mare. I think I've got a winner coming here. Maybe Queen's Plate. Maybe the Derby, even. I just hope she throws a colt.
Jackson was looking at the rose bushes by the lane, thinking that he would have to get them ready for winter soon. The beds were Jackson's pet project, a labor of love.
What do you think?
Sonny asked. I think I got too much to do to sit around talking about races that haven't been run by a horse that hasn't been born. Jackson turned at the sound of the front door opening. Earl Stanton walked out onto the porch, burdened down by several pieces of mauve-colored luggage that was clearly not his own. He was wearing creased cotton pants and a pullover, the casual attire he'd adopted since remarrying. His gray hair was cropped short, and he was lean and angular. A limo was parked in the yard, the trunk open, and he headed for it. The owner of the baggage emerged a moment later. Gina was wearing tight capri pants and high-heeled mules. She had her shades perched atop her blonde hair, and she was looking suspiciously younger than she had a month earlier. She headed for the car. Earl came back to the porch to talk to Jackson.
I still don't know about running the Flash in the Queen Anne. I want him tip-top for the breeders.
He needs the work, Jackson said. Horse has got to run.
Just make sure he's sound. Don't worry, Pop,
Sonny said from the chair.
If the Flash breaks a leg, we'll just prop him up on crutches and stand him to stud.
Earl never even turned towards Sonny, who was still sitting in the wicker chair.
Take care of my horse, Jack,
Earl said, and he stuck out his hand.
And I'll see you in New York.
The limo pulled out of the yard as the Lincoln was driving in. Dean was wearing shades and trying hard to appear sober as he and Polly piled out of the car. Sonny came down off the porch and limped over.
Where you clowns been?
Sonny asked.
We were in the slam dance, Dean said. Drinking scotch with an angel named Misty. A rack like Pammy Anderson, right, Polly?
Polly never said a word, just stood there, his eyes on the ground.
I want you to take that roan up to the Double B in London to get a bread, Jackson said. They're waiting for her.
What stud?
Dean asked. River Ridge, Jackson said.
Get her loaded. I'm driving into Woodbine to see to the Flash.
The roan mare bolted when they were loading her, slamming Dean against the trailer wall and then running off across the yard. Jackson, afraid that she would head for the highway, called to Polly inside the barn. The mare was standing on the lawn, snorting, her ears back when Polly came out. He began to talk to her, and as he approached, her ears came forward. When he reached her, she nuzzled him like a dog, and he led her into the trailer without a hitch. It was 3 o'clock by the time Dean and Polly hit the 401, Dean behind the wheel. Dean was getting plenty tired of his situation with Uncle Earl. Earl wasn't really his uncle. Dean's mother had been Earl's first cousin, and when Dean had had a little trouble with the law, Earl had agreed to hire Dean as a kind of gopher. Polly was another story. He was Earl's true nephew. His mother was Earl's sister. She'd never married and had died in Montreal in a flophouse. Polly had a way with horses that bordered on spooky, and he was a good man at the end of a shovel. Dean couldn't say the same for himself. He'd passed through a procession of menial jobs, proving himself to be ill-suited to each. Whenever he'd made an effort to assert himself, he'd been knocked back on his heels by Jackson or Sonny. Now Dean was just running whatever errands Jackson considered to be beneath his station, and Dean was getting sick of it. He was 30 years old, being treated like a teenager. Dean and Polly reached the stables at shortly past 8. Dean got out and shook the stiffness from his joints. The place didn't measure up to the Stanton farm, but it was a pretty nice spread just the same. There was an older guy waiting for them. He had a steel gray brush cut and long sideburns, and he said his name was Jim Burnside. Polly unloaded the mare, and they tucked her away in a stall in a small barn off the main building. Jim tossed in a sheaf of hay and filled a water pail.
You guys sticking around?
He asked.
When you gonna breed her?
Dean asked.
Tomorrow morning, I guess?
Well, we got no plans, Dean said.
Let's get a drink,
Jim said. There was a country and western bar in a mall a couple of miles away. They sat at the bar, and Jim and Dean ordered rye and water, Polly a beer. Polly walked to a video machine along the hall.
How long you been with Stanton?
Jim asked.
A while now,
Dean told him.
So, what's he like, Earl Stanton?
Jim asked, reaching real quick for a fresh drink.
He's all right. He's sure been the big dog the past couple of years. Here and in the States, both. That Jumpin' Jack Flash has got to be the best four-year-old in North America. The old man can pick a horse, Jim said.
Dean took a drink.
Yeah, well, it helps when you're sitting on $500 million. The nags are just a hobby to him. He makes all his dough with the electronics. $10 million's nothing to him. I bet he spent that much bailing his little boy out over the years.
Sonny? Yeah, I heard some stories.
Well, I'm betting they're all true. Sonny's got a real problem with women. Never convicted, though. They don't convict multimillionaires. You or me, we'd be dog meat.
Spoiled rich kid, eh?
Yep. Dean turned to look at Polly playing the machine along the wall.
What's the stud fee on River Ridge?
He asked, turning back.
50.
What a life, Dean said. Do nothing but screw. $50,000 a pop. Jim laughed.
Ha! It's not like the horse gets the money.
Horse sperm's worth more than gold, you know that? Dean said in wonderment.
What a racket.
Yeah,
Jim said.
A man could make a lot of money with one of these top-notch studs. In a month, he could make enough to retire.
How'd you do it? Dean asked.
Well, you got a product. It'd just be a matter of selling it. There's plenty of buyers out there, guys who wouldn't ask questions.
You know these guys?
You betcha I know them.
Dean reached for his smokes and lit up.
Episode 2 of All Hat was read by John Cleland. Tomorrow night, Brad Smith's novel continues as Ray and Sonny come face to face at a farm auction. Sonny and Dean aren't the only ones with fantasies. Riches, fame, travel to exotic locales, everyone has an escapist fantasy. The Vancouver poet Brad Cran shares one of his own favorites in his poem, You Dream of a Place.
You dream of a place where sleep falls from trees and steam rises from the jungle floor. Warm wind massages your back and never turns to slap your face with the rudeness of winter. You forget your sins and boil your pride until it evaporates towards the sun and rains down without drowning you in expectation. You were born to giggle like a salamander in a rippling stream. The darkness of clouds curdles your curiosity until there is nothing in your mind but rain. Go back to the dream. The smell of wildflowers as thick as crushed berries. Slippery stones and fallen waterfalls tell the time of erosion. You've been standing in line for a decade that gave you no new love. Rocks are shifting. Somewhere the jungle's canopies rise. When you squeeze your eyes shut, you feel the world shift into a time that you see with the clarity of a vagabond who says, "At last, this will do."
Brad Cran's poem, You Dream of a Place. It's read by Robert Boxtall, and we found it in his collection, The Good Life, published by Knightwood Editions. And before we leave, a reminder that the Between the Covers collection of audiobooks is available through Goose Lane Editions. Selected readings from past seasons of Between the Covers are available on CD or on cassette. For more information and to order, you can call this number toll-free. 1-888-9-COVERS. That's 1-888-926-8377. Stay tuned now for the CBC Radio 1 News, and then for classical music from CBC Winnipeg on Northern Lights.